Today, on this episode of the PeerDirect Special Spotlight.
You know, one in 500 individuals really throughout the world would meet that diagnostic criteria for hypertrophic cardiomyopathy.
Yeah, so lots of patients.
Today, Drs. Marin and Rowan join the podcast to discuss diagnosing obstructive hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, key considerations for clinicians in this PeerDirect Specialist Spotlight. All opinions expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the views of this educational initiative supporters.
Hello, I am Dr. Martin Marin, Director of the Hypertrophic Cardiomyopathy Center at Lahey Hospital and Medical Center and Associate Professor of Medicine at the University of Massachusetts School of Medicine.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ethan Rowan, Co-Director of the Hypertrophic Cardiomyopathy Center at Lahey Hospital and Medical Center, and Associate Professor of Medicine at UMass School of Medicine.
So, Ethan, it's great to be here with you. Obviously, we have worked together for a long time, so I think it's going to be a nice time to just chat about kind of the current state of affairs on a number of topics related to hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. And the first one we're going to get into is sort of the current management of symptomatic obstructive HCM, particularly given the emergence of novel therapy with cardiac myosin inhibitors. Before we do that, though, maybe it would be good to just set a little bit of background and foundation before we get into that topic. And let's start first with hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, or HCM. We make the clinical diagnosis of that condition based on imaging, right? With a wall thickness of 15 millimeters or more identified anywhere in the LV chamber by imaging. Maybe a little bit less than that if the patient has a family member with HCM, but generally 15 millimeters or more without any other obvious cause to that degree of hypertrophy. And that diagnosis, if you apply that diagnosis, we're looking at a pretty common disease, wouldn't you agree?
Completely. You know, one in 500 individuals really throughout the world would meet that diagnostic criteria for hypertrophic cardiomyopathy.
Yeah, so lots of patients.
Lots of patients.
Lots of patients in the United States with hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. And then, so once we make the clinical diagnosis of HCM, just so that everybody's clear, I think one of the things, and we've talked a lot about this, and this is sort of how we practice, of course, once we make that clinical diagnosis, then the next step there is to put the patient in the right hemodynamic category of HCM, for which there are two groups, obstructive and non-obstructive HCM. Why don't we take us through a little bit about how you define that and how we kind of come to that classification?
Yeah, really important distinction, just because the two differences, obstructive versus non-obstructive, really changes what treatments we would offer for our patients. When we think of obstructive, what we're talking about is patients who have impedance of blood flow out of the heart, so outflow tract obstruction because the mitral valve gets sucked into the thick heart muscle. So that's what we consider obstructive HCM. And with that, really has high LV systolic pressures, dynamic mitral regurgitation, increased left atrial pressures, which can be an important mechanism of symptoms.
Okay, so good. So essentially obstructive HCM, which is going to be the focus of what a lot of what we're talking about today, is from, it's based on imaging, mitral valve making contact with the septum, creating that pressure gradient in the left ventricle, so extra pressure, higher pressures in the left ventricle compared to the aorta, which we can measure reliably with echo, right? Continuous wave echo Doppler, and we can get that quantification of the pressure gradient, which we usually define as in an obstructive HCM as 30 millimeters of mercury or more. So when the valve touches the septum, you get 30 millimeters of mercury or more. There are sometimes patients that come to us that have a clinical diagnosis of HCM, but don't have evidence of outflow tract obstruction under resting conditions. So what can we do to kind of bring out that obstruction? Because there is about a third of patients that have the what we're calling the provocable obstruction, the obstruction that's present when you provoke. And so how do you do that usually?
Provocable obstruction, I mean, they look like they don't have obstruction, but you really need to get obstruction out. And we do that two ways. One is Valsalva maneuver. So we're having patients bear down and then image them to see if they have obstruction. And then two, which in many ways is my preferred mechanism looking for obstruction, is with exertion, where we put them on a treadmill, have them exert themselves, which is what typically reproduces symptoms in HCM, and then get them off the treadmill and then look to see if they develop obstruction with exertion.
Yeah. Okay. So good. So super important, you know, point that if you've got a patient with HCM, no obstruction at rest, to try to provoke so that you can determine if they develop obstruction, because as you said earlier, you have to know whether the patient has rest or provocable obstruction to put them in that obstructive HCM category, because by doing that, you may potentially open up other treatment options like we're going to talk about in a minute that may not be available to the one third of patients, which we'll also talk about a little bit as part of this series called non-obstructive HCM, that don't have obstruction at rest or with provocation. And that, of course, defines the purely non-obstructive HCM group. If you have obstruction, either at rest or with provocation, I think the other really important point for people to sort of relate to here is that that is the most important determinant of why patients with HCM develop limiting symptoms and decreased exercise capacity, correct?
Yeah, and is a target for treatment as right. Well.
Target for treatment.
So you see obstruction. As you can imagine, if someone has high LV systolic pressures, it could really cause symptoms. And typically what we're looking at is exertional symptoms, shortness of breath, exertional fatigue, and occasionally angina or exertional lightheadedness, with obstruction being the mechanism behind those.
That's right. That's a good point. That raises the theory. Just so before we get into the therapies here, again, I think it's really important for people to recognize too that when you have a patient with HCM, one of the things that's sort of, I think, that I've learned in particular over the years is that, you know, a lot of times patients will either consciously or subconsciously minimize the symptoms because they've been living with obstructive HCM for sometimes, in many cases, years or decades before coming to evaluation. And so the point here that's really important is that as cardiologists or healthcare practitioners, that you really have to put a lot of emphasis on the history taking here to try to determine if that patient with obstructive HCM that you're seeing has symptoms that we think we can attribute to the obstruction that we're then going to consider to treat. So I think we put a lot of time into the history to try to elicit whether that patient may be limited day to day by symptoms from HCM. Typically, I think you'd agree that the most important manifestation limitation is shortness of breath with inclines, like stairs or hills, more than level ground often, but also, as you said, exertional fatigue, chest pain, and palpitations. So that's really important. Sometimes utilizing the family member to help you there can be helpful as well, because family members sometimes can pick up on limitations that sometimes the patients don't even realize that they're experiencing. Well, Ethan, that's about all the time we have for this segment. I want to thank you for that great conversation on how to evaluate patients for one clinical diagnosis and putting the patient in the correct category of obstruction and non-obstruction. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, Marty.
And thank you to our audience for watching. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
And that's today's Special Spotlight. Thank you for joining us for this episode of PureDirect Medical News Podcast. For more stories like these, visit us at PureDirect.com. Thoughts, comments, or suggestions, please leave us a review on your preferred listening platform or email us at editorial@PureDirect.com. Listen and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also download our Amazon Alexa Flash Briefing Medical News Roundup or just ask, "What's my flash briefing?" Thanks today to our guest, Drs. Marin and Rowan. Join me next time for an episode where we cover the latest stories in the world of medicine.